Today on PC Gamer Podcast 351, Call of Duty Ghosts, Grand Theft Auto 5, and Tyler tells us of his adventures in Iceland. It's May 2nd, 2013. I'm Evan Lottie from PC Gamer, joined by my fellow PC Gamer editors, Logan Decker, editor-in-chief.
Howdy.
Tyler Wild.
Ahoy.
Senior associate editor. Hey, Tyler.
Ahoy, ahoy.
And contributing editor, TJ Hafer.
How's it going?
Just fine. So kind of a light news week, but we're going to dive into some other topics. We're also going to be talking about fear in games a little bit as our roundtable-y, feel-good, feel-scared discussion. But first... a Cat Fantastic bonus round ambush question.
Is he authorized to do that?
That's his. But.
I've filled out all the paperwork.
Okay.
In triplicate.
I have.
He stole the tome.
This no number way. Has appeared frequently as a key card access code in games such as Deus Ex, System Shock 2. And BioShock. It's a multiple choice question. I'm going to give you.
I know exactly what you're talking
the
about.
The selections now,
but okay. I don't know the exact number.
And please buzz in, however you feel, however you deem necessary or okay. appropriate. After I've read all four possibilities, is the four digit number 9393-0230-1978 or 0451? Logan.
0451.
Correct! Yes! Oh, I rule this universe! You are all my serfs! Yes!
Wow.
Oh my god.
Is that the first time you have ever answered a Cat Fantastic question? Because you're
actually,
usually the one giving them.
Yeah.
That's, wow. How magical.
Yeah. And of course.
So that was your first.
I nailed it!
Your first points ever.
Nailed that.
Logan's
yeah, yeah.
On the board.
How much did it?
300 quadrillion points.
Oh, quadrillion. Come on, that was a tough one.
Yeah.
It was.
All right, I'm not questioning the, you know.
And by answering correctly, you've now opened the door of our podcast room. You may leave. No.
Well, I didn't just...
just kidding. Well done. Yeah, so that number's been used. I think it originated in System Shock 2 or Deus Ex.
Yeah, I can't remember which one it was.
But yeah, used in BioShock. Used with like a couple different variations.
Well, and it was the office number of the office they all started at, wasn't it?
I think so.
Yeah,
so when in doubt, some variation of 0451. We'll probably open that door for you.
Is everybody's mic working?
Oh, yeah.
I believe so.
Because I just didn't hear anybody say, you're amazing.
Oh.
No, I thought it dropped out. No, if it didn't, I was just checking.
I mean,
that's fine.
I feel like it's implied at this point. Like,
No. Dude, totally fine. I didn't mean that you had to. I just thought maybe you did and I didn't hear it.
Oh, certainly.
Yeah, right.
Okay. So let's move on to the handful of announcements and news that we do want to talk about this week. Chief among them, because it's a big franchise, Call of Duty Ghosts kind of sort of made official this week with a teaser trailer. We're going to be learning more in advance of E3 in June, of course. They do what all publishers seem to be doing these days, like a live-action teaser trailer where there's all these different, like, warriors being shown, you know, ninjas and samurai.
Yeah.
And
it would have been sorry.
Well, no, actually, I thought it was kind of a cool teaser if it were, like, teasing a cool, like, history documentary
yeah.
series.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
actually,
that's what
like, it was a well-produced teaser. It just told us nothing about ghosts other than that masks.
Yes. Yeah. So they end on the tagline, like, you know, they're showing all these masks and various, you know, historical warriors and things like that. And they look pretty cool. You know, nice costuming, I guess.
Yeah.
And they end on the tagline, there are those who wear masks to protect themselves, and there are those who wear masks to protect us all.
The problem with it is that it got me hyped for the wrong thing.
Yeah, I was like,
I want a historical brawler where you have, like, people from all throughout history, warriors from all throughout history fighting. That would be fantastic.
That would be amazing.
You'd have, like, samurai versus medieval archers. It would be wonderful.
I get less than nothing from live-action teasers or trailers. I mean, no matter how good they are, I just, like, eh.
I feel like companies just do it to feel good about themselves to some extent.
I mean, that's fine too, but...
I want to know what the real impact, like return on investment is for those kind of productions. I'm not sure. Yeah, the handful of things we do know about Call of Duty Ghosts, it's going to be a spinoff of the Modern Warfare storyline, not the Black Ops storyline. It's going to be set in the future, predictably, and it'll be out November 5th on all platforms.
Yeah.
Hooray. So Grand Theft Auto V, we don't know if it's on PC officially. We don't know if it's coming to PC, but I think we're proceeding with that assumption. Mm-hmm. Some trailers came out this week. What do we think of those character-driven trailers, guys?
I like them. I think the characters in this have the potential to be the strongest story protagonists that we've had in the series so far. I mean, Miko was famously not everybody's favorite character, and even going back further, I guess Tommy Vercetti is generally regarded as a pretty good character. Was it Carl, I think, from San Andreas is kind of... He had his moments. But these three, I think, have a lot of potential to present an interesting narrative.
I think at least two of the three, you know, one of them is a little bit more earnest, I guess, a little less... I don't know. They sort of seem like they're carrying like a little bit more or less like unseriousness around with them.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it's just inherent to the things that you do in GTA. You're driving a car on the opposite, you know, the wrong side of the road, crashing into stuff, hijacking ambulances, and eating hot dogs.
It's hard to treat it as serious business sometimes.
Yeah.
I thought all the trailers were very entertaining. But at the same time, I also felt like, you know, I was watching a mashup of every TV show that's popular out right now, you know, and it was...
Well, there's, the one Michael, he's like the dad, and there's, you know, kind of a Breaking Bad connection there, potentially, you know, and the crazy hillbilly guy.
I just felt like I was just getting this big whiff of all these, you know, these series, which, and there's, again, there's nothing wrong with that, but...
And being a pop culture parody is you know, sort of the core of GTA.
Right.
Although you do have to be focused, I think, when you do it, so...
Yeah, and the Housers, who are two of the co-founders of Rockstar, they've always been, like, big students of pop culture and movies, I guess, and you can see just that milieu, like, feed into the trailer really easily, and all the stuff that they do.
Right.
Like, their music selection is really, like, actually... Their dad, like, operated one of the most popular jazz clubs in England, I guess.
Wow. Oh, really?
And I think Dan Houser started his career at, like, RCA, like a...
Huh.
Which is a record company. Which eventually got into games, like, they had an interactive version or something like that. So, yeah, they have, like, a big musical background. It just kind of shows, and obviously...
Oh, yeah.
They're one of the only few companies that releases soundtracks and things like that.
And there are a bunch of previews out now. And just... Quickly, the one thing I glimpsed detail was that the shooting is now a lot more like Max Payne 3, and that made me really happy, because the shooting has been, like, we don't know how that will be on the PC. We've always complained, can we have decent mouse shooting in a GTA, please? Right. But, you know, if they have taken maybe some of the work on Max Payne and put it into the shooting, that would be so wonderful.
Yeah, cause for excitement if that's the case. It is kind of telling that, you know, a lot of our colleagues, you know, here in our company, you know, OXM and other magazines and websites, they were invited to check out GTA. We were not.
Yeah, yeah.
So and I can tell you exactly why. I know.
Why is that, Logan?
And I've already got the credibility because of the, you know, Cat Fantastic question.
But of course.
So there's that. Mm-hmm. You know, so, I mean, they've even, like, gone so far as to sort of almost snidely go... that is under consideration, you know? Like, right. Oh, we don't want all that money from PC gamers, you know? It's kind of, it's just so silly, right? So there is almost like they're making a point of we refuse to even talk about the PC right now. And the thing is that they developed, I can't remember when they said it, was sometime last year that they said, you know, well, this is going to be for the PS3, not the next-gen console. And, you know, that's going to hold them back considerably, you know, in terms of what they can do. And there was a screenshot comparison on Reddit that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
It had the promotional screenshot and then the screenshot from the PS3. And it was comical, you know, how awful the PS3 one looked. I mean, not awful on its own, you know, but...
You put them next to each other and it's like...
Yeah, and you know the promotional screenshot did not come from PS3 or an Xbox.
Right.
And the thing is that, I mean, that's why. It's like, you know that they, you know, developed them on PCs and you know that they know how great it can look. But if you start, showing off all that stuff and talking about, it'll be on PC eventually. Mm. It's going to take the gloss off the console releases because they'll be showing all these gorgeous screenshots, and all that. And they'll be saying, we're coming out on PC. Well, you're going to be like, well, I want to play it so you can see the character's expressions because this is it has got a very movie-like atmosphere, And they don't want people thinking about that right now because, they want to push those console sales.
So to try and figure out when this game might be coming out on PC, we asked TJ, you're our Viking correspondent. And
right. Apparently, I'm also the math guy.
You put some points into math.
Exactly.
And we had you sort of crunch the numbers on what the delays have been between, console announcement of past GTA titles, PC announcement, like confirmed on PC of past GTA titles, and then also the distance between releasing on both versions.
And it's pretty consistent generally, at least for the releases. With the announcement, we had that huge wait to hear about GTA 4 on PC. It was like over 2 years from the original teaser. But as far as releases go, it's pretty uniformly 7 months is what I found. It's a pretty... If you look, we have a chart on the website and in our article about it, and it's a fairly flat line. So if you go based on that alone, GTA 5 for the PC should come out like mid to late April of next year. And we also figured out for the very latest, if they made us wait as long as they did for the announcement as they did for GTA 4, and then as long between announcement and release as they did for San Andreas, which was actually the longest window, it would be July 4th, 2014.
So, by our numbers, that's like the latest it could possibly fall.
Yeah, that's like the outside ballpark, basically.
Yeah, cool. So, you can go see, check TJ's work on our website. Yeah. If you just Google GTA 5 PC release date, you'll find our article.
Right.
That's a reasonable amount of time. It's, it's frustrating, et cetera. But, if they get it right and if it's moddable, which, that's the huge question, right? Because before it wasn't, and look at the good things that happened anyway.
Right.
I'll be happy if that's the case. All right. So I want to give a little bit of time to mention this controversy that popped up yesterday about a company called the ESEA. I don't know if you guys are familiar with them. They're sort of a smaller esports organization, primarily known as like the competitive Counter-Strike communities, essentially. They're all the guys in North America that are running, CS 1.6 and Go tournaments. And essentially, it had been discovered that they had... Someone in their organization, an employee, had introduced malware into their public anti-cheat client that they used for tournaments and leagues and things like that. Bad. So this malware was not like it wasn't like a virus necessarily. It wasn't hacking your files or some stuff like that.
Even better,
it was something that would use utilize your GPUs to mine what are called bitcoins. If you spent any time on the internet in the past month or so, you probably have heard the phrase bitcoins passed around in a slightly scathing sense. They're sort of this artificial but real, virtual currency that can be...
Yeah, it's the first virtual currency. And the funny thing is that nobody even knows who made it. They think it is a Japanese guy. He goes by a Japanese name. But I think...
But they couldn't find anyone by that name, I think.
This is like... he just sort of released it. And I think Wired may have corresponded with them once or twice. But it's a virtual currency. And the way it works, at least for the purposes of understanding this, is there will only ever be 20 million bitcoins in circulation, ever. And the more bitcoins that go into circulation... you mine a Bitcoin by solving a math problem. And the more coins there are in circulation, the harder the problems get progressively as, more going onto the market. So now what's happening is at the beginning it was easy. Like anybody could mine, Bitcoins. But now that there are millions of them out there, it is getting harder and harder. So you need, the most computing power you can get. And so, of course, GPUs have become incredibly powerful. And so what it's doing is it's grabbing the math power of all these GPUs and pooling it to solve these problems faster.
Yeah.
It's his proper cyberpunk territory now.
Oh, it really is. It totally goes in the shell. I mean, if you've watched the TV series, it's basic. Yeah. Anyway, I'm curious, like anonymous hackers.
Yeah, I'm curious how much like system resources was it pulling from every individual system? Do we know?
Like, I'm not sure. I mean, basically, someone discovered this because they're like, "Wow, like, why is my GPU usage so high right now? I'm not doing anything." You know, they are honestly like part of their flaw in whoever perpetrated this was like. They targeted an incredibly intelligent group of gamers.
Right.
Or hyper aware of performance and resources and stuff like that. So this has been happening since April 13th. And the total value of the mined bitcoins is allegedly about $3,700. And the ESCA has responded to this. Their response was very strange and like off-putting. one of their co-founders start a response with lol and then sort of like really inappropriate, like fed into this anecdote, like, oh, like, yeah, we were like playing around with this idea of using this code, like it seemed like for internal purposes to, you know, mine bitcoins. We're like, yeah, let's not do it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it turned out that someone within the organization, it hasn't been identified who, decided to add this code into the client and, you know, send outward. Anyway, so one of the other co-founders, who's much better with PR, named Craig Levine, has publicly apologized. He's saying, you know, they're going to donate 2 times the amount of the mined bitcoins and, you know, any of that money that actually exists to the American Cancer Society. They're going to raise the Season 14 prize pool by the equivalent amount, $3,713.
That's a slightly better response than lol.
Yeah, slightly.
I'm just waiting to see like someone go up for a Senate deposition for financial misconduct and just be like,
but, lol. Is this not illegal though? I mean, it's malware, right?
Yeah. I mean, I like to think that it is. I'm honestly like, I'm really hoping for larger repercussions for these guys. I'm not asking for legal action, but like somebody needs to be fired or resigned or like, this is totally unacceptable. I mean, you think about like, if you're using, I mean, so April 13th, that's about 2 weeks or so ago, you know, like using somebody's video card, like it's unclear what capacity, but you're actually drawing power to do that. Mm-hmm. And that's an expense on all these people's part that was incurred. Like it raised their power bill by, I don't know, like who knows how much. It might be $1 or $2 or $10 or something. But
it doesn't matter. I mean, you've...
It's terrible, yeah.
You've been deceitful and...
Right.
If I put malware on any of your computers, I would be facing a judge.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, without them knowing, it's... So, yeah, I guess we encourage you guys to follow the story and sort of like hold this company accountable in whatever way you feel comfortable. It's, you know, unfortunate that sort of, you know, they're at least spinning it as a rogue person within their organization did this. I think it's going to be necessary for them to identify that person or at least, like, I don't know, be more clear about what happened and how this happened because it's terrible.
Yeah, there's no, like, we were just goofing off, whoops, sorry excuse. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I don't know. It's funny, this culture, it's like at least the first guy who responded is sort of treating this like... you know, like a gaming clan messing with their buddies, and like that's not what this is at all.
And they initially said that this was an April Fool's joke or something.
Yeah.
Oh, my Lord.
Which, you know, unclear if they were totally serious about that.
And how do we know that it was limited to Bitcoin mining? You know, I mean, we just.
Well, no, trust, you know, trust is absolutely breached.
All those congressmen, they should just be like, no, that vacation I took using taxpayer money, that was just an April Fool's joke. That was. Totally.
But it also teaches us to pay attention to what's going on with your PC and try not to dismiss. Gosh. Because I mean, I know when my cards are at full bore.
Yeah.
They're not quiet.
Yeah, I can hear them.
Yeah. And I know I read some of the accounts of the people who'd had this malware, and they said, yeah, I was wondering why were my machines grinding, you know, at all hours.
Mm-hmm. Sucks.
And so it's not necessarily from even this thing, but and malware in general, but, you know, always be vigilant because, you know, you're just going to see this kind of thing more and more.
Yeah. It's cool how, like, I don't know, everybody kind of has a spider sense for what their system is doing. Like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You have the same setup for long enough and you start to.
Like listening to your muffler, like, what's going on? I need an oil change, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, we want to give a quick mention about Neverwinter, which has gone into open beta.
It has.
Terrific. And as we mentioned in the intro, Tyler, we sent Tyler to Iceland, the capital of Iceland.
Reykjavik. I believe I'm saying that correct.
Last week for EVE FanFest, the annual sort of gathering, convention. I'll let you take it from here, Tyler, you know, for EVE Online and other CCP titles.
Which would be Dust and, to a very, very much smaller extent, World of Darkness, for which they showed a little bit of target footage, which they're not releasing. So that's all we got on that. Tom Sr. did a wonderful preview in which he drew stick figures representing that target footage. So go check that out if you're interested in World of Darkness, which I think we all are, because it...
I'm very interested.
There's a lot of great ideas in there. And actually, TJ did just post a What We Want article.
Huge World of Darkness fan, actually.
But, of course, FanFest is mostly EVE Online. It's the 10-year anniversary this month. And obviously, it's CCP's, you know, biggest and most played games. They're really trying to push Dust, and they're trying to push it to EVE players. The response I got was sort of, yeah, we're okay with it being in our game, but I wish they would just focus on EVE because we don't really want to hear about it. And, you know, there were a few Dust players there. You could spot them at the keynotes because they were the people clapping for Dust announcements. And they were kind of in a corner of the room. But so yes,
you could call them Dust Bunnies.
Dust. That is probably what EVE players already call them.
Dust is still a PC. PS3 only
exclusive.
Title. Right?
Yes, it's an open beta. I made the mistake of calling it released to one of the developers, and he corrected me that it is not released. It's Dust 514, and guess when it's coming out?
May 14th?
Yes.
I see what they did.
How many Cat Fantastic points? I mean, it's like the same numbers.
That'll
right?
certainly be a question, maybe.
Okay.
It'll come to PC eventually, I'm certain of it. But until then, it was all about EVE, and it was fantastic. First of all, Iceland is just nutty on the weekends. Like, the bars there don't close. I mean, you got to close them so people know when to go home.
Because not how it works.
Drunk people don't know when to go home. That's what being drunk is about. You got to turn on the lights or else they'll just stay there.
Go home, Tyler. You're drunk.
Yeah, that's exactly. That's what the lights mean.
That's not how being Nordic and drunk works.
Right. But as far as, you know, the working I did while I was there in Iceland, I talked to a lot of EVE fans, and they're super fascinating.
What's like the average age of the hardcore EVE fan?
Man, I think I was looking at a lot of people in their 30s, probably. Mm-hmm. There were a fair number of younger players there. People brought their kids. A few people brought their kids, so like that's how into it.
Do they have their kids mining for them?
Probably. I mean, why would you have kids teaching?
Yeah, I mean,
if they're not going to work for you in EVE. Yeah, so I would say 30s and 40s. But there were some 20 somethings. Not many teenagers, based on the pub crawl. Because I think the drinking age is 20. In Iceland.
Yeah.
Not that it really mattered, but the pub crawl is one night at FanFest. They get all the people attending, and they get into groups with flags, and they just, like, storm downtown Reykjavik and in these different groups. And
tactical drinking.
It was tactical drinking. And literally, like, everyone was there. I think there were, like, 1,400 people, something like that. It was over 1,000. But by about 3 a.m., they're running around, like, stealing each other's flags, and it just became this drinking brawl. Not that anyone actually fought, but, or maybe they did. I don't know. But, yeah, talking to them was so fascinating because they're from all different sort of walks of life, all different countries. I talked to people from Finland, and I talked to some Icelanders who were super nice. And actually really friendly, all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Iceland's a wonderful place, and you
it
should
is.
Go if you can. But the big announcements were fairly well received. They're working on a TV series based on true stories that happened in EVE.
So like a dramatic TV series?
It sounds like it, yes.
So like Defiance? based on in-game events?
Right, but I think Defiance is very different. To me, that's a cross-media marketing thing where it's like we're just doing this sci-fi story and we're kind of gonna let these influence each other.
Mm.
Whereas this isn't about a back and forth influence. This is about getting stories from the first 10 years of EVE, having players submit these stories, and then dramatizing them. And HBO came up. They wouldn't commit.
Whoa.
No, they wouldn't commit to whether they were gonna pitch a pilot to HBO, but it sounded very likely from my talks with them. That seems like what they want to do, but they haven't filmed a pilot
yet. I'm sure it's hopeful.
I'm sure it's a hopeful thing. They haven't made a pilot yet. So they haven't pitched it to anyone yet, as far as I know. But they're also doing a Dark Horse comic along the same lines, so that's kind of cool. The actual Eve stuff was kind of very... If you don't play Eve, you're not going to get why people applauded at preset scanner probe placements and stuff.
I mean,
why people got on their feet when that was announced.
This is exactly what I'm curious about because, you know, it seems, I mean, Eve has shown an incredible amount of longevity, but it's all, you know, it's certainly never achieved or conceivably will achieve, you know, World of Warcraft level populations, Guild Wars 2 level populations. And yet they continue to develop the game. And like I asked them at GDC, like, are you ever going to stop making this game? And they just kind of look at you weird. And they're like, well, yeah, no, that's...
I got that too.
It's going to be around for a century or more.
They're talking about constructing a monument in Reykjavik to Eve.
Right.
Nice.
So...
Literally.
Do they continue to design and update Eve for that existing group of people? Or are they eventually going to, like... Did they talk at all about making Eve more accessible? Because I feel like that... There's interest there. I mean, every time an interesting controversy...
Everyone says, I would love to play, but I just can't get in.
Yeah. But,
I mean,
yeah.
Like, that is almost the universal response. And, like, if I could dedicate a couple hours a week, like, you know, 10 hours a week or something to Eve in a small capacity and, like, feel involved, I would. But...
Yeah. This is a question
I feel like
I
they haven't designed that for me. Yeah,
this is a question I asked. And good. The answers were kind of difficult to parse because they were half, like... Oh, it already that already is there, and half sort of like we're working on that, but really it was hard to get specifics. They wanted to talk about the new expansion and what that does, which actually is maybe part of that. The new expansion is all about making exploration more fun because they found that most new players coming into Eve decided that their career path would be exploration, and they looked at what they had there for exploration and went, oh, you know, this is kind of crap. Actually, this isn't fun. So. They're working on that because they know new players who are solo coming in, they don't have a corporation yet, might want to do that. But, you know, the thing they kept repeating was that, well, you're supposed to play it for a while and then it gets really fun when you meet people and create a story and get into a corporation. I think a lot of people are bouncing off of it before that happens. I think a lot of Dust players will too because that's what they're saying needs to happen in Dust. And I just feel like... on the PS3, you know, I mean, entertainment's consumed a little bit differently. People might bounce off it if they don't instantly kind of understand how to play and how to have fun with it in a corporation. Mm-hmm. You know, like, people didn't form Counter-Strike clans the first week of playing, you know what I mean? Like, you just have fun playing it because it's fairly accessible. So that's a problem. I mean, I guess the answer is I don't know. I didn't get a clear answer on how to make it, how they could make it more accessible.
No, sure.
You know, you said earlier that, you know, it's never going to have the numbers of World of Warcraft. But every single one of my friends who plays Eve, the one thing that it has achieved is, like, every single one of them live that game as deeply as any World of Warcraft fan I've ever known. Mm-hmm. And so that is an achievement, you know, like, all day on the texting, you know, the other people in the corporation And, you know, even when they're not in front of their PCs, they're still living it, you know?
I was talking to this girl, and I was like, do you know anyone who, like, goes into wormholes and stuff? Because I've heard cool things. And she goes...
Is that a pickup line? So, like, hey, girl.
Hey, girl. You want to talk about wormholes?
Gone through any wormholes lately?
The point of my story is that she says, oh, I live in a wormhole. So not like I play the game and this is what I do, but like I live there.
No, you were telling me about this. There's like some group that's like building a fleet inside of this wormhole that's
going
to come invade like the Bane.
Well, here's what I found out is the you can't, like they can hide in wormholes, but they can't get large ships out of the wormhole. This is terrible. But like only so much mass can go through the wormhole entrances. So
I think they make remedies for that.
This is actual Eve gameplay, so please don't take it from the window.
Tyler, get us out of here, Mr. Wild.
Warp speed.
Jump!
Engage. Okay, we're now talking about Dust. So Dust is an...
I want to know about the people that live inside wormholes. Well, like is that an emergent thing that's developed?
Kind of. I mean, they were there, but I hadn't heard about the idea of people going into wormholes and just starting corporations in there and mm-hmm. building star bases. And, like, no one can come in and attack because they can't bring their big ships through it. But they can build titans inside the wormhole. The titans can never leave.
Damn.
These are the massive capital ships.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
They can't leave, but they can build them in there, so anyone who comes in with their smaller ships is just screwed. But so I'm gonna go investigate this soon. I started playing Eve again.
Do you know if a wormhole is inhabited before you go in?
No. What happens is there are, like, entrances that can only withstand, are alive for so long and can withstand so much mass going through them, and they'll collapse. But the wormhole space is always there, and new entrances will reappear. So you can go through one, and it can collapse behind you, and then you're kind of screwed until you find a new exit, and you're just in that wormhole space where there might be a corporation sitting in there with a bunch of ships. So it's kind of like a Venus flytrap for people who get curious.
And you could follow people around with, like, a really massive ship to go in after them and close it and trap them?
Yeah, I don't know.
That's really interesting. Yeah. I think because so much of Eve revolves around, like, heavy organization.
Yeah.
And, like, long-term planning. I like the idea of an element that's
these are like the people on the outskirts, on the frontier of the frontier, who are kind of, like, hiding in these. So, I mean, I may be wrong on some points, which is why I'm going to investigate, and hopefully tomorrow I should be inside one looking at what they've built up in there. But, yeah, I was talking to Logan about Eve earlier and how I think I want more people to work on this sort of systems-based. I mean, they even the developers in the keynote say, we're not sure if Eve is a game anymore. It's like the simulation of this universe, and most of the gameplay stuff we put in is, or this might be me paraphrasing, but it seems like a lot of the gameplay stuff they've put in is kind of getting ignored or being exploited.
Right.
Like fighting NPCs is...
Yeah, it's they like call mining it, almost.
Yeah, they call it
ratting
mining.
Or, yeah.
Ratting or... Yeah. Kill mining? I don't know. It's like they just see the systems now, the players. They don't really see it as, quote, gameplay. These are these are means to an end for them to build their star bases or do the more interesting stuff. So, but I don't think I think a game like that could exist without the barrier to entry of Eve if the metaphor was a little different. Because Eve is super complicated spaceship stuff where you have to learn the names of all the different components and how to put them together. But if you go down to something like DayZ, the metaphor there is you're a guy walking around an island. Mm-hmm. But you could, you know, that kind of stuff ends up emerging there, too. So I want to see more of it because I really have a hard time getting into MMOs when it's like, and this is something that CCP will say, and so I don't want to necessarily just repeat their sort of spiel, but I do agree with it that the theme park style of MMO doesn't interest me.
No,
getting
I agree.
In a queue to go through, a raid that everyone before me has done to do the same thing, it just doesn't feel special. Whereas in Eve, if I start a corporation, I'm doing something that feels a lot more meaningful, you know? I'm changing this universe.
Eve is an MMO that hangs its systems on the things an MMO can do that nothing else can do. Whereas I feel like theme park type MMOs are trying to put type like gameplay systems from other genres into an MMO framework. And I think that's why it ends up being inherently less interesting.
I think we're seeing that a lot recently in terms of action-style gameplay.
Yeah.
MMOs, right? From DC Universe to Terra.
Yeah. And, I mean, I enjoyed those games for a while, but I don't know if they can really sustain any... I guess they're sustaining some people's interest because there are a lot of people still playing.
I mean, the main advantage is permanence,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we're talking about. Like, that's kind of what Eve... leverages, maybe.
Yeah, and having a non-persistent world in an MMO just seems to not be, to me, utilizing, like TJ said, the advantages of what an MMO is. You know, it's like if I kill a thing and then I go back and it's just there. I mean, that happens in Eve where there are NPCs that are kind of like come and go. But yeah, I'd definitely love to see more MMOs. Just try this. Like, trust players to accept consequences.
Yeah.
And trust players to, like, not rage quit your game when they lose something. Trust them to make a story out of it and have fun doing that. I've lost ships in Eve and been like, wow, that was a great story.
Yeah.
You know, you've died in DayZ and been like, that was a great story. So, like, don't coddle people into thinking that their character has to, you know, come back with, you know, oh, you lost some experience points. Because in the end, like, that's what gets boring because nothing's on the line.
Yeah.
In Eve, everything's on the line every time you go out there. Mm-hmm. Every time you undock from the station, it's kind of, it's a little bit intense when you see your ship go out there into open space because you're like, I'm so vulnerable right now, you know, I've got to be on my toes.
Cool.
And you know, you said earlier that that you even enjoy doing these mundane tasks.
Oh, in Eve.
And that's when you know you've gotten something right. When you can do something mundane and repetitive, and you're still enjoying yourself because it's, you know, you're that plugged in,
meaningful,
you know.
It has meaning.
Whereas,
yeah.
You know, I played these, you know, we've all played these giant blockbuster games, and you know, the scenarios are amazing, the art's amazing, and all that, but you just feel like, oh, this is just.
Well, it's, yeah,
you know, the spectacular stuff is mundane, and that's getting it wrong,
right.
You know.
Well, the example is just like when you do a big boss thing in another MMO. It's like knowing that. Everyone who's come before you has gone through
right.
here and done this, and that it'll be there tomorrow or right when you're done. You can go back through it. Makes it feel mundane. Whereas mining asteroids in Eve, when you've got, you know, people talking to you over corporation chat about, like, you know, checking out, making sure there are no pirates around, and we're mining for a reason. We want to build a capital ship or something. That seems like super interesting, even though mining on its own is technically a pretty mundane activity in the
right.
game. So, interesting. I hope we see more of this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Go read Tyler's coverage of EveFanFest on PCGamer.com.
Yeah, and I'll hopefully have something up about the crazy wormhole people. They call them wormholers, but after our earlier discussion, I think I'm going to have to be delicate with how I discuss
it. Is it going to be like that documentary about the guys that lived in the tunnels underneath Las Vegas?
It's going to be just like that, actually.
Awesome.
Outstanding. So a good segue from you talking about trusting players to sort of, you know, find their own meaning, construct their own fun and things like that. We want to talk about fear a little bit on this podcast mm-hmm. and sort of, you know, what aspects of fear that we like in games, you know, what are some good executions of it.
Well, I liked the shooting. Fear 2 wasn't as good to me, but...
little girls not every time.
Not F-E-A-R, first encounter assault recon. But the emotion... And I've been playing Stalker, and a lot of people on Twitter have rightly lambasted me for not playing this game before. I tried, and I sort of gave it up a couple years ago.
I did the same.
So I'm super ashamed of that, but I'm just, you know, have a huge hard-on for this game right now. I'm playing Pripyat. I'm playing it with Stalker Complete, which is like a big enhancement mod. And, yeah, just, you know, really quickly, if you're not familiar with it, Stalker is a first-person shooter. Open worldy sandbox game, you know, you're basically cast into this area called the Zone, which has been exposed to, you know, a terrible nuclear event, and there's all kinds of crazy monsters and like unexplainable phenomena that wants to kill you, and it's really harsh and brutal. There's some survival mechanics. You have to eat and bandage yourself and cure radiation and loot stuff, and yeah, it's brutal and fun and made by some of the same folks that went on to make Metro 2033. So. I started playing Pripyat. It's fantastic. And the thing that struck me most about it was just how much trust the game put in me, you know, in this incredibly brutal context. I'm playing on a veteran difficulty, which is like 3 out of 4, to figure everything out on my own. There's so little tutorial and so little exposition to explain the insane stuff the game throws at you. So a good example of this. So I've only been playing about 10 or 12 hours or something, and I don't know, 4 or 5 hours in, it's, you know, it's an unstructured game. So it depends on when you encounter this stuff based on just what you do. You sort of just casually I went into this mission, and there are these sort of like sleepwalking human characters, and I'm like, okay, that's totally a zombie, right? Like this other NPC is walking me through this mission. We're about to like go snipe something, basically, and they don't get talked about or explained or like acknowledged really. And there's these like zombie they're called zombified stalkers, and they're basically guys that, you know, I had to go on Wikipedia to figure out what these guys were. I didn't do that immediately. I did it later. Like they've been exposed to radiation for too long, and they become zombified basically. But they have guns, so. This, you know, I'm introduced to them, and later on I encounter them in sort of a freeform mission at night. And it was like one of the best experiences I've had in a game this year. And I'll try and reproduce it as best I can. So I'm at this, like, it's night, it's raining, there's like an amazing skybox with, you know, incredible constellations in the sky. And it's like a concrete factory, so it's really industrial. It's outdoors. And there's sort of this, like, sort of, you know, a metal staircase leading up to a tower. And I'm walking up to it at night, and I've got my flashlight on. And I hear, like, these grumbling voices, and I recognize them as, like, okay, those are, like, the zombie guys I encountered before. They have, like, you know, these certain sets of, like, really creepy sound effects that they produce. And I can't find them. I'm looking for them, and it turns out, like, you know, by scanning with my flashlight, they're at the top of this tower. And I just kind of see their silhouettes up there, and I'm like, okay, I probably have to go up there because the mission I'm on, I have to, like, find a set of tools and bring them back. And there's no, like, specific waypoint for them on the map. I have to sort of figure that out. And I'm like, okay, like, how am I going to get these guys? Like, I don't want to walk up there and get trapped and go face-to-face with them. It's extremely dark. Like, everything's really occluded. So I decide, like, I'm going to whip out my pistol and just kind of try and pick them off from down here. It's, like, 50 feet off the ground or something. And I just start shooting at them. And they start coming down, and, like, their AI is at least smart enough to start coming down the stairs. And the ballistics are actually, like, really nice in Stalker. It strikes this nice compromise between, like, arcade-y feeling gunplay and, like, based on, like, your how degraded your weapon is, it'll deviate the shots and things like that, which is pretty cool. And it was just, like, this terrifying circumstance because I didn't know how these guys behaved. The game had done nothing to sort of explain the rules of how to kill these zombie characters. I actually didn't know until that mission that I saw them carrying guns. It was a surprise that they shot guns to me, right?
All right, right.
So it was sort of like subverting the conventions of what a zombie was, but it was also, and sort of to take it a step further, I started shooting these guys down, and occasionally they'll go into this animation where they're sort of like writhing on the ground, and it seems like they're paralyzed or something. You know, you shoot them in the chest a few times, and they're doing this, and I'm like, okay, what's going on with that? And, you know, I'm shooting another guy, and I notice that guy's doing that, and he gets back up. He starts shooting at me and kills me, and I have to, like, reload and things like that. So, you know, I go back into the circumstance, and, you know, I get a zombie in this sort of incapacitated state again. He's on the ground. I shoot him in the head, and he gets up.
Hey.
Yeah. So I'm like, that's not how it works.
Excuse me, sir.
You're not playing by the rules. So it was sort of like, I was, you know, after this happened, I was trying to, because it was an amazingly fun and, like, atmospheric experience, and it felt like really owned by me. Nothing felt scripted. I felt like I was just sort of stumbling into this. And I was trying to, like, unravel why it was so interesting to me. And I think, like, it wouldn't have been as fun if Stalker had done anything to explain to me this is the mechanics of this enemy. These zombified Stalkers do this, and they're inaccurate with this range, and they carry this type of weapon usually.
If they had done the intro scene where one of them stumbles up and the character learns how to kill it, and you learn how through that character, which is, I mean, that's a trope in almost every
convention.
Shooter.
Oh, yeah.
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 Yeah. Or even, like, I mean, you think about Borderlands. I mean, Borderlands has, like, some amazing enemy design. Mm-hmm. It even has stuff that does some of the same things I'm talking about where they subvert conventions, mm-hmm. right? There's the Goliath character where if you headshot them, mm-hmm. they go into rage mode, and they're actually more dangerous.
I hate those guys.
And like, you know, discovering that for the first time is fun in a similar way, but it feels authored in the way that it's introduced. Like, it feels like a game designer specifically, like, okay, this is the first time the player is encountering a Goliath. I want there to only be one of them. I want it to be, like, this sort of landscape so they can deal with them and understand the character and how they behave. There's none of that in Stalker for me.
Yeah, they're just there.
The game was kind of like, yeah, we built this world, like, f*** you. I can't deal with it. And, like, learn how to deal with it by making mistakes and f***ing up. There are these other enemies that are basically 95% invisible. You can hear them. You can hear, like, their heavy breathing. But there's sort of these, like, humanoid-sized Cthulhus, and they'll disappear and sort of dart around. And you can hear them coming after you, and you're looking right in front of where they are, and you can't see them. And there's, like, I don't know, as of right now, I'm using shotguns to deal with them. There might be a better way of dealing with them. There might be, like, an item or a detector or something I don't know about. But the point is, like, unfamiliarity mm-hmm. was, like, so central to my enjoyment of those experiences and, like, those, you know, sort of self-authored gameplay experiences. If I had known a lot about these enemies coming in, if I had known the right way to deal with them, their weaknesses, like, where they hang out, how many hit points they have, stuff like that, you know, I would have treated it like a game rather than an experience, like a problem I had to solve rather than just this horrific circumstance. So anyway, that long anecdote is sort of just a way of kicking off a discussion about like forms of fear in games that aren't like conventionally scary, aren't like, you know, jump out from behind a cupboard or whatever, you know, open a door and there's a zombie in there and that grabs you, kind of scary. But are just kind of well-executed moments of anxiety that are either inherent to the game itself that sort of emerge naturally or, yeah, are handled in a different way. So what are some examples of that, folks?
I remember and anything that's, you know, because, you know, you're in a tense environment and you ratchet up your senses. You know, you're on guard, you're looking, you're listening, and... a lot of times they'll mess with that. Like, I remember Undying. There's one part where it's raining outside, and it's a very scary game. You know, there's things around the corner. It's very dark, and you're always on the watch. And there was a sequence in a greenhouse, and the raindrops are just hammering on the glass. Mm-hmm. So you walk in there, and it's like you can't sort of... you know, it's just the sound is just overwhelming.
Yeah.
And you can't listen for something that might be behind you or in front of you in the shadows. And it was just nerve shredding, even though there wasn't really anything going on at the time. And I thought that was pretty clever because it took away something that I needed for self-defense.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't have to be a horror game. It could have been in anything, you know, just knowing that one sense that I relied so much on is now just totally occluded.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. I can think of a couple examples. One that's from more of what you would think of as a horror game, one that's kind of not. One that just came to me really quick with subverting conventions but doing it in the other direction. Not a lot of people, I think, played it, but there was this mini expansion for Amnesia called Justine. And for some reason, my mind just went back to this one hallway that's in Justine where you walk into this hallway and there are these, like, faceless, like, marble statues in, like, these really ominous poses. And you have to be going back and forth between doors in this hallway for a good 20, 25 minutes to solve all the puzzles. And you're like, okay, when is it going to happen? When are these things going to come to life and start, you know, attacking me? Never happens. They stay completely still for the whole thing. But you're paranoid the entire time.
Right.
You know, when are these statues going to come to life? And it's a very different, you know, kind of fear than, you know, what would have happened if, okay, and now they're coming after me. I knew that was going to happen. The other one I thought of that's a little bit more unconventional is, you know, fear for other characters is something that sticks with me a lot. In Half-Life 2 Episode 2, where Alex gets taken by the hunter, you know, that was very scary for me. Like, I wanted to progress, and when I don't want to spoil too much, but just like wondering if she's all right through that whole episode. I found that very tense. And the suicide mission at the end of Mass Effect 2, like any decision I make here could potentially get people killed. That was very scary to me in a way that's different from, you know, your standard horror game type of fear. Yeah.
That would have been amazing if in Amnesia one of the statues sneezed.
Yeah.
I would have, lost it.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there are some shooters that handle this well. I mean, just sort of by the nature of how vulnerable they make you feel. Counter-Strike is a game where it's really easy to die. And like, any situation where you're in sort of a one-on-one or like one-on-multiple enemies situation, you're the last guy in the round, there's this feeling because Counter-Strike has a knockout mechanic where anybody that dies is sent into spectator mode.
Everyone's watching you.
Everyone's watching you.
Mm-hmm. There was a match we played where I was the last man standing on our team. I remember because you were watching me and I forget what the map is called. It's one of the custom maps on our server, and I'm kind of up at the top of this house defending the bomb site from the terrorists, and I know I'm the last one.
Oh, yeah.
So I know everyone's watching me, but I'm like, and there's a guy trying to bait me out there by taking just pot shots, trying to get me out of whatever my hiding place is. And so I just kind of like, I start moving toward the stairs, and I'm like, no, he's just trying to trick me. He's trying to trick me. And then every time I heard a footstep, I'm like, are they coming up these stairs? If I go check, are they aiming right where I am, or do they not know I'm up here? So that was kind of terrifying, especially knowing that all eyes are on you. And we ended up losing, but I did manage to take one guy down who kind of bolted up the stairs, and I think I don't know if he knew I was up there, so I think I surprised him when I started taking shots. But yeah, that's really tense, and especially when it gets down to one-on-one, because you know they could be anywhere, and it's kind of about who sees the other person first. Mm-hmm. But to see them first, you kind of have to make the first move. You have to be the one who gets around the corner to see them running around another corner. Anyway, yeah, Counter-Strike is terrifying when everyone's watching you.
I remember the when you first board the Borg ship in Elite Force, and, you know, of course, like, at first they ignore you. And just, you know, just walking around the heart of the Borg ship knowing that you're just surrounded by danger, but for now you just have to stand down, be cool.
Yeah, because it's a game. You know that you're going to be thrown into conflict with these guys at some
right.
point.
And then, you know, so they're practically brushing right by you, and you're like, yeah. Very, very unsettling.
There was a moment in XCOM, the new XCOM, where it introduced a new enemy. And XCOM does do this pretty conventionally. It'll introduce enemies one at a time to get you used to them. But it was one of the flying guys that are pretty tough.
The cyber discs?
Yeah. Is that what they're called?
The frisbee of death. Like the Swiss Army frisbee.
Or are you thinking
lasers?
Of
the
jetpack dudes?
The jetpack dudes.
Yeah, I forget what they're mm-hmm. called.
But so it was the first time I encountered them, and I was kind of playing a little bit. I had gotten pretty comfortable with what was happening in the game prior, so I was kind of being kind of loose. I'm like, you go there, we'll be fine. And then one of them just comes up and just kills one of my guys, and I just sit there going, no, he can't do that. Mm-hmm. That guy can't be dead because that. Yeah. What is this thing? He can't do that. And it was so...
And
so
he texts, LOL.
But after that, like, my heart rate's up because I'm like, oh, crap, everyone else is screwed. Like, I can't believe that just happened. Uh-huh. I can't believe that guy's dead. And now I'm, like, fearing for the lives of the rest of my soldiers. So, I mean, that was one way. I mean, permadeath is obviously something that helps.
Yeah, there are consequences, right? I mean, that's a great example, though, because, I think... In a lot of those cases, there is like a little bit of a voiceover bit from like your German doctor lady or whatever when a new enemy appears.
Yeah.
Not like fully expositing like, oh, it's. I think she like she actually doesn't know. Like she wants to know more about this creature.
Right.
She just kind of like.
But she'll imply the level of danger.
Yeah, but it's almost like it's discrete from difficulty because it isn't just like the game's turning up the difficulty and it's harder now. It's throwing at something at you that you do not understand.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's
inherent. The mm-hmm. game is called Enemy Unknown.
Right, which is why I'm sitting there going, no, he can't do that.
But
it's not fair.
But that totally connects with what I'm saying about Stalker. Like, knowledge is power.
Yeah.
Knowledge is power. And feeling vulnerable, feeling like, I don't know what to do in this situation. And having to experiment on the fly when your dude's guys, like your life or your guy's life are on the line.
There's totally something. There's something to be said for not telling us everything about a game. I mean, sometimes when I see trailers where they're like, in this diary, we're going to break down this enemy and how this enemy works mechanically, yada, 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 and how this gun works. I'm thinking like, wouldn't you have wanted us to discover that as we played? And I mean, I love transparency when developers tell us all about our games, of course. It's our job to get them to tell us stuff about them. But sometimes I'm like, wishing to have stuff withheld a little bit.
You know, there was, I remember a long time ago, there was a game for the GameCube. And I picked it up because I love horror games. And I really didn't know anything about it. And it was called Eternal Darkness, Sanity's Requiem.
Yeah.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
So I had no idea what happens, right? I did not know that as you go mad, things just get really messed up, and I didn't know why suddenly my body was clipping through the floor. I'm like, oh, this is a ridiculous bug, and I'm caught, and I don't know what to do. And then I realized, oh my God, this is the game. And you know, they kept throwing those situations at you. You didn't know where it was going to hit you next, or what the manifestations of your madness was going to be. And so anytime anything even slightly weird or off happened, I remember thinking, oh, am I going crazy again? Or was that just something I thought or imagined or something?
It's that element of the unknown. And so many games, I don't know. I don't know what to say for the sake of accessibility, maybe kind of kill that. The unknown, really. I mean, they might do a surprise introduction of an enemy with like a cutscene, but after that, you know what it is. Yeah, I mean,
well, Resident Evil 4, like they had the most amazing enemies, but they're always explained for you beforehand, you know, like the one you have to shoot specific spots in its body. Right. Oh, to defeat this, you know, and it's like,
Yeah, I mean, so.
And that feels very much like it arises out of, like, very old Japanese game design, honestly, mm-hmm. where it's like, you have modular enemies. I know exactly what you're talking about. It's right. the regenerator, I think.
Yes, oh, yes, that's it, yeah.
Oh, I hated those things.
And, like, yeah. you have to use, like, the thermal scope to see
right,
the spots
right.
of it. And it's properly tense. Like, you have to get behind it, I think, and, you know, the sort of gymnastics of doing that right. in the level.
Anyway, it was so. Very fun. It just wasn't, you know, it didn't have that ingredient that you were addressing specifically, right?
Yeah.
Well, and I think that's part of one of the reasons that we get so many harrowing experiences out of games like DayZ, because it's the same sort of ecosystem you get thrown into with you know, Stalker or you know, to a lesser extent, even Enemy Unknown. But it's other players that you're worried about, and you can't know what they're going to do. Like, even if you have played the game before, you still don't know what they're going to do. Like, you know, the zombies in DayZ are a secondary obstacle. If you're running from a horde of zombies, you're really afraid of being shot by another player. You're not really that afraid of, am I going to get away from these zombies or not? And, you know, so I think that open-world multiplayer games have the potential to be the scariest, even scarier than, you know, something like Amnesia that's a very directed, produced, horror-focused experience.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what the Stalker guys do in Survivarium, if I'm saying that correctly.
Yeah.
They're sort of, you know, multiplayer Stalker MMO-type game.
Yeah.
We don't know too much about yet, but we will soon. Cool. Well, thanks for talking about that, guys. Let us know if you're playing, if you have played, if you're curious about like games that use that like withhold information from you to sort of create anxiety and things like that. It's sort of a highly specific topic, but one we are curious about if you've had a similar experience. So we have one question submitted this week that I want to throw at us, sort of asking about, you know, how we cover things and within a genre. So Alex Walker sent this to pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com, which you can contact 24/7, always open. And we're also listening at 877-404-1337, extension 724, a toll-free number that, you know, basically sends the question directly to us. So feel free to send questions and comments, guys. Anyway, Alex Walker asks, do strategy games, particularly those of the turn-based variety, get less coverage because of their complexity and time investment? The launch of the alpha of Neptune's Pride 2 and the beta for Wargame Airland Battles seem to have been affected a little by this. So, I don't know. I mean, there are a lot of things happening in PC gaming right now, obviously. It's a really vibrant time for the platform, and, you know, we only have so much time available ourselves to play and experiment and decide what to cover. We're always getting pitches and seeking out stuff to cover ourselves. And I mean, to some extent, it's like we're aware of this stuff. And, you know, something like Neptune's Pride 2, are you guys familiar with that game at all?
A little bit.
I have heard of
it. It's sort of a social deception game. The Idle Thumbs guys, Chris Remo and Sean Vanneman and Jake Rodkin, who are Telltale and Double Fine employees, have been playing it and talking about it. Really interesting sort of space strategy game where you're sending ships and stuff, and there's a lot of opportunities for intrigue and deception. It's really
I like
cool.
intrigue.
Yeah, me too. But yeah, I mean, I guess I'd agree. Like, to some extent, like, you know, the more complex a game is, the more obscure it is, the more time it takes. Like, yes, it's going to be a little
Absolutely.
Bit harder for us to, because we always want to feel like we understand something and we have like an authoritative statement about it. Like, I think, you know, it's natural to feel that way. Like, if you're a movie critic, you're not going to watch the movie halfway through and then write a review, right? Like, games take a ton of time, and that's sort of a big difference between it. It's sort of a reason, I think, like, it's hard for, you know, we think about Roger Ebert, who is kind of like a comprehensive critic of film and like, you know, almost everything. He was talking about games with increasing frequency, but that's partly because it's really easy to just watch and digest a film. Like, you know, there are no difficulty settings. You don't have to, you know, when you're playing a game, like, you kind of have to test it in some ways as well. Like, you have to, especially when you're reviewing, like, you know, you have to reproduce bugs and things like that if you encountered it once to just sort of confirm it. You have to try all the multiplayer maps, et cetera. So, yeah, I mean, it's inherently a little tough for us to hit every single thing we want, but, you know, we try to prioritize as best we can. I wouldn't say strategy games in particular, turn-based strategy games, like, are unusually less accessible or less easy to get coverage?
No.
I don't think it's specifically strategy. I think we focus partially on what we're passionate about and partially on, you know, what we see our audience being passionate about and partially on, you know, games that pique our interest in some way because of some element. And obviously we can't write about everything, as Evan so eloquently just explained. But yeah, like TJ's been going nuts on Crusader Kings coverage. But that happens to be something, it's a very complicated game, but one that he's very passionate about, which is why you've seen more coverage on it than maybe another very complicated game. Not because it's a better game necessarily, and we try to hit as many as we can.
But yeah.
To some extent, there will be some influence from, you know, what we're playing right now. Yeah. Eve is a very complicated game, which I'm happy to talk about because I'm very unfortunately started playing it again.
Yeah, you pulled me back into that one too.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
And we're actually in the process right now of we just debuted a new video segment on our YouTube channel.
Oh, yeah.
YouTube.com/PCGamer called Download This. We're sort of like featuring a lesser known game or a mod or an add-on or something. And we play it and show it to you guys and talk about it. It's sort of as a way of like recommending something that's worth your time. Like something I'm going to fit into that segment, for example, is a Arma 2 mod where you play as cops and robbers and...
You've talked about it before.
Yeah. I'm going to like finally get a chance to show this, like get our community in there, because it's something that, you know, you will not see any other game site covering, but it's weird and worthwhile and like it's worth seeking out.
So. And it's weird that Evan's like so into it because he just doesn't like Arma 2 at all.
At all.
Yeah.
Not even a little.
Not a big fan of it.
It's crazy.
All right. So that brings us to our playlist segment. What we have been playing, what we're going to be playing. TJ.
Well, there was a deal on Steam the other day that Logan threatened me in various ways if I did not take advantage of, which was Max Payne 1 and 2 for like $4.
Duh.
I had not played either of them. I had not played either of them before.
I'm really curious to see what you think.
Yeah, I put out a call on Twitter that's like, do these still hold up? Do I need to get some graphics mods to, you know, enjoy them?
All I know is me trying to go back to them. I was like,
Yeah, because, I mean, the first one...
I've already played them several times.
Oh, geez.
The first one at least looks a little bit like PlayStation 2-y.
I mean, it does get hilarious, though. The faces, because they just... You know, I mean, these are really simple models with just photos plastered on their faces.
Yeah, exactly.
With like three or four expression states that they just
And
flip
just
between.
Hearing this really dramatic dialogue over that.
Great.
Yeah, so I'm gonna clear those out of my backlog. I'm also playing a beta of something that I'm going to a multiplayer event for this weekend. I think I can say that I'm playing it at least, which Europa Universalis 4. I can't say anything else about it, but
cool.
That's been taking up a lot of.
There's another turn-based strategy game.
There you go.
Possible real time. Get it right.
Okay.
Plausible real time.
The engine they use for Crusader Kings in Europa is technically real time, but I play it paused like 75% of the time. So
I like implausible.
Implausible nice. Real time. Yes. Yeah. Is that technically what BioShock Infinite is? It's implausible real time.
Logan, what are you playing?
I was really persnickety because I worked some long hours over the week. So I would come home and I'd be really tired. And I started up like The Cave.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't get into it. I'm like, okay, I appreciate this is doing something a little different. But then I thought, you know, I don't want a point-and-click adventure to necessarily do anything different. You know, I like them the way they are, and it kind of made me hunger for even like a nice serious one. You know, I miss pre-rendered backgrounds. Pre-rendered backgrounds. Yeah. I thought they were fantastic, and you could just show so many amazing things. And
like Night of the Rabbit. It looks really pretty. And
really? Okay.
And very cute. I don't think it's out yet, but it's one of the Daedalic games.
They're
really pushing the
classic old school adventures, which I would really like to see again. Like something like Siberia, which was imaginative, you know, and had great characters and unbelievably gorgeous background. So I just didn't get into it. And then I picked up Tomb Raider, the new one, and get into that
I've
one.
I've heard you've got to play like over an hour.
And I totally buy that.
Right.
But I did not have that.
I played
that
45
hour.
Minutes and said, this game's stupid, and went back to what I was doing. But then my girlfriend Anne played it while I was at work. And, like, when I got home, she was still playing it. And I'm like, what did you see that I didn't? And she's like, how long did you play? I was like, 45 minutes. She's like, ah, of course you quit.
Right. Yeah. So then I fired up Prototype again because I just wanted to feel like a badass.
Right.
And I loved that game. And it's still so much fun. Because I didn't like Mirror's Edge. I did not like the first person experience at all.
I love Mirror's Edge.
But this was like, you know, you're doing the full on parkour thing and run up buildings and you're like, you know, cutting people's heads off with your little chain arms and all that. It was just a fantastic time. But I'm definitely going to go back to Tomb Raider this weekend and get through that part because I do know, I have heard that from everybody that, you know, you get past the initial part and then it's just a fantastic adventure.
Once it opens up, apparently, once the island really opens up to you.
I'm down with that.
Cool.
Oh, I'm also playing a game called Demon Chic on the iPad that begins with, like, a police busting a drag party or something like that. And then the police turn out to be demons something like, yeah, so.
Sounds like a strong start.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Yeah.
Well, I am bummed that the next episode of Kentucky Route Zero is delayed, because that's a great game. I think it's kind of steep, I think, when you're buying it with only the first episode released. I think it's like $25 or something on Steam.
Yeah.
I could be off, but it's in that range. But it is really cool. I highly recommend it. Maybe if you want to get all the value and not have to wait between episodes, wait for them all to be released and then buy it for 20-something.
That's what I would do with TV series. I would just wait until the whole season was done.
Me too. I prefer to consume things that way rather than waiting, but I really like it. But I had a long plane ride to Iceland, so I played some Civ 5 on the plane.
Oh, cool.
Trying to overcome restart syndrome, and I'm having a really hard time overcoming it. And I do it in RPGs too, where, you know, half an hour in, I go, I think I'm going to make a new character. I don't like this anymore. And so, you know, like, you know, 100 turns into every Civ game, I go, I don't really like the resources on this island. I don't like that this guy built a city where I was going to build one. Like, it's this desire to have it go perfectly, and it's something you really have to fight against if you're going to get the experience, you know. You have to let it happen and let the story go, even if it doesn't go the way you wanted it to. And man, I always wanted it to go the way I wanted it to. So I finally, like, played a longer game that I still have going.
As who?
I am Rome.
Okay.
And I set personalities to random, and Gandhi's really getting on my...
is. Gandhi, like, every
even with
Civ
a random
game.
Personality, he's just...
Every Civ game, Gandhi is this warmongering...
Korea is just... You know, everyone, we're talking about fear in games. I declared war on Korea, and then Gandhi's like, yo, that's my ally, bro. Now we're at war, too. And it's, I'm playing on, like, an island nation. I send out a ship, and I think I got a pretty good navy. Mm-hmm. And then I haven't explored very much, so I finally, like, go find the shores of Korea. And they've got, like, every tile covered with a ship, and then I'm like, so you guys want to do peace now? Cool. Is that cool, peace?
Yeah.
And then, of course, the AI really bugs me sometimes. It's like, well, yes, we'll have peace for 5 of your cities. No. No, that's not okay. So I had a lot of gold, so I bought a bunch of ships and beat them off until, like... And then it's like you do some what seems like kind of minor damage, and they're like, how about we declare peace? We'll give you 100 gold.
Yeah, okay. I've had that happen.
A few turns later,
too,
you wanted my cities, but yeah.
It's like you kill one of their units. Yeah, they're like, please don't hurt us.
And then, of course, I just started playing EVE Online a bit
more. Yeah, back into that, too.
Yeah, I'm thinking of starting my own corporation.
Damn, what should I call it?
I think I'd do that. I was thinking of starting, like, the press corps.
Nice.
Yeah. A lot of my fellow press I met at FanFest got really hyped about it, which it's easy to do when you're around all of these fans telling wonderful stories. It's very easy to get excited about it, and they're all like, we want to play, we want to start a corp. And I'm like, all right, guys, I'll get my account going, and you guys come join me and Jita, and we'll figure it out. And I have a feeling most of them won't have the time commitment to get through the tutorial.
Yeah.
Not that it's, like, too complicated for them or that, you know, they can't handle it. It's just that they're going to go, ooh, I have other games to play, or I need to travel for work, and, like, I can't they're going to drop out after a week or so. But that's okay. I'll still start my corp and see if I can even sustain it for more than, like, last time I think I played for about 5 or 6 months before I was like, no, nope, I'm done.
As I played,
I'm done. There's other games I have to play now.
Totally.
What's your most awesome ship right now in EVE?
A Hound stealth bomber that I just got all fitted out and put a big bomb in it. The only skill shot, really, that I know of in EVE are the bombs. You actually have to use the velocity of your ship to kind of, like, lob these bombs. So I haven't been able to use one yet because you can only use them in nullsec space. You can't use them in secure space. Yeah, because they blow up and everything gets all blowed up and stuff.
I see.
Yeah, that's the technical term.
All blowed
that's
up
how bombs work.
Yeah. But I look forward to trying it.
Yeah.
I'll wish you well, Tyler.
Evan, what are you playing?
I'm going to continue to play Stalker. It's really treating me well. Like, just another, like, thing connected to the anecdote. Because the game didn't tell me I had night vision, like, all the time with no battery life or whatever, which seemed kind of weird in a game about survival. Like, I went through a lot of, like, night combat that was super satisfying to me just with a flashlight. And the flashlight dynamic is really cool. There's, like, a little bit of delay in terms of, like, when you turn, it just lags a little bit behind you. And, I mean, you know, MVGs are obviously really useful in those situations. And I was like, well, I'm super glad I didn't use that because I would not have had as much fun. I would have, like, been able to identify threats. I would have just sort of dismantled these enemies. It would have been easy for me. And there's actually segments where, like, because of the way the lightning works, like, you're using the flashes of lightning. And this isn't, like, a designed game thing. It's just sort of emergent. You're waiting for flashes of lightning to see where the enemies are. And then
that's awesome.
You're lining them up in your crosshairs and shooting them. And then, yeah, you know, and like that, I would have been totally removed and not able to experience that if I had just been running around with NVGs on.
I just had a tactical epiphany, by the way.
A tactical epiphany.
The Invisible Cthulhu guys. Have you tried thermals?
I don't know if those are even in the game yet. Like that's
again, see, that's the kind of thing I would look for. Yeah.
Right. I'll figure it out.
I like it.
Yeah. I also picked up a copy of SWAT 4, kind of for the same reason. I'm trying to eliminate these big important shooters from my backlog. I've never played SWAT 4, even though I love tactical shooters, even though I love co-op. So time to solve that. Hope to tell you guys more about that next week or the week following. And we will see you then for episode 352 of the PC Gamer podcast.
Holy moly.
Thanks for listening. Yeah. Come find us at PCGamer.com. On Facebook as at facebook.com/PCGamerMagazine. On Twitter as at PCGamer. And I don't know. We're a lot of places.
We are.
We're on YouTube.
Those are among them. Yeah.
Please come talk to us.
PCGamer.
Come be with us.
Yeah. If you like the podcast, it's an easy way to support us.
Be one with us.
Yes.
Just read and share our content. Buy our magazine. All those things. Helps us out a whole bunch.
We love you so much.
Yeah. Continually and endlessly.
Later, Gators.
See ya.
Thanks.
Stomst.
Oh, I realized at the end there I forgot to talk about EVR.
What is 20 years? Oh.